I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the San Antonio water system is entering a pivotal period as it faces growing financial pressure, aging infrastructure, and ongoing drought conditions, all while balancing affordability for residents, climate change, growing demands of massive data centers, and supporting the development of one of the fastest growing cities in the nation. For the fifth consecutive year, SAWS is holding water and sewers rates steady in its 2025 budget, but has signaled it is likely going to ask for a rate increase in 2026. The increase would help fund long-delayed upgrades in wastewater treatment plants, replacing aging pipelines, and new capacity to meet future growth. The head of SAWS, Robert Puente, joins us to take your calls. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio Water System is at a turning point. SAWS hasn't raised rates since 2020, but that might soon change. The utility says it's facing mounting costs to repair aging pipes, modernize wastewater plants, and keep up with the rapid growth. A proposed rate increase in 2026 could fund those upgrades, but it could also raise concerns about residents who are already stretched by the cost of living. At the same time, drought continues to strain supplies, even as large industrial users like data centers consume millions of gallons of water. SAWS is considering relocating a downtown chilled water plant to make way for Project Marvel, a $20 million move. Beyond rates and infrastructure, there are questions about water quality, PFAS contamination, and a proposed wastewater facility over the Edwards Aquifer at Guajolote Ranch. And city leaders are debating whether SAWS should be contributing more to the city's budget, a move that would further pressure rates. Today, we're joined by the president and CEO of SAWS, Robert Puente, to answer your questions about SAWS and the future of water in San Antonio. You can call in at 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Robert Puente, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Prop 4. Let's talk about something good that happened, okay? Let's talk on a high note. Proposition 4 passed on Tuesday. Texas voters, 70% say they want $20 billion put in to invest in Texas water needs. That's a good thing. We probably need a lot more than that, $20 billion. Can you react to that? And how much of that would end up in SAWS, having to help SAWS out?
Yes, $20 billion is a lot of money. What is unique this time, it is dedicated funding. In other words, it's not just at the whim of the legislature. This is money that's from your sales tax that's going to go directly to Texas Water Development Board for them to distribute into Texas. This new initiative, 50% of the money will go to find new water sources, and 50% of the money will be to invest in the infrastructure. So SAWS was involved in the negotiations to get that bill across, and we will continue to try to get our share of the proceeds as they come out of the Texas Water Development Board.
But not enough to offset the need to do a rate adjustment. Can you talk about that?
Nowhere near enough. One of the issues regarding this kind of initiative is to find new water. They specifically, this proposal specifically talks about four things: reuse water, conservation, desalination, and aquifer storage. San Antonio, SAWS, we already have the nation's largest recycled water system. We have the nation's largest groundwater-based aquifer storage and recovery. We lead the nation in water conservation, and we have already built a desalination plant. So we've already done what the state of Texas is saying that the rest of Texas should do. So that access to that kind of money will not come as quickly as it may come to other parts of Texas. The other half, 50% that's going into infrastructure, the formula that is used will probably benefit smaller communities, rural communities. because they're not investing in their system the way SAWS does. So again, we have a huge hurdle to climb to be able to get our fair share, because SAWS has been investing in maintenance, in infrastructure replacement, and so we will just try as hard as we can to get our fair share of that money.
Well, to the east of us, Beeville, they're really in bad shape. They're in a water emergency. They don't have enough water, and their infrastructure is not good. It's a small community, not enough people really to support trying to find the money in order to do the repair. Further to the east of us, you know, we have Corpus Christi. They're in dire straits, can't find enough water. They had a desal proposal for ocean water desal, and that didn't work out. So you look around other parts of Texas and you see they're really in trouble, but San Antonio is not, mainly because of the forward thinking and investments that's been going on here.
Exactly. We have raised rates before, and that is to pay for the infrastructure. If you look back in the history of SAWS, one of the first things we did to make sure we had adequate water supply were the easy things. Use less of what you have, water conservation. So we have a tremendous amount of per capita use reduction because of that. The next thing we do, use what you have again, recycled water. So all of the water from your sinks, your commodes, we collect it, we take it to our wastewater treatment plants, we process it, we clean it up, and we send it back to San Antonio to be used by Toyota, Microsoft, the City of San Antonio, the Riverwalk, USAA. A lot of big industries here in San Antonio reuse that water. So we've done those things. We've invested on those things. In 2016, our desalination plant came online. So we're taking brackish water, salty water from right here in Bexar County, bringing it up, treating it, and putting it into our distribution system. So we've been way ahead of the curve, and we are the model for the rest of the state, and frankly, a model also for the rest of the United States.
But yet we're in stage three water restrictions right now. We've been there since late June. The rule is landscape watering one time per week, either in the morning or in the evening. So we're still trying to make sure we're water-wise.
Yes, we are still in a drought. We're probably in year five of who knows how long drought. It is tracking almost exactly like the drought of record of the 1950s. And so we still have to be very aware of how we use water, understanding that a big use of water is during the summer months for irrigation purposes. So that's why we have those kinds of restrictions, to make sure that we do the right things today that will help us tomorrow.
But our wet months aren't that wet anymore.
That's true. And we rely on those wet months because our customers don't buy as much water, but we still use our permitted amount out of the Edwards. We pump it out of the Edwards, and we transfer it into another aquifer for storage. And so we have a very good storage program. Essentially, it's like a CD, put money in, take money out. So we put water in when we have plenty of water, and we take it out when we need it.
When you say CD, I think about my music collection.
A certificate of deposit.
Yes, yeah. And so, but the idea that, you know, we're in stage three now, you know, what would stage four look like? How far are we from that?
Stage four stage four really affects SAWS and not SAWS' customers. And by that, I mean...
That's when we start pulling out of the CD.
Yes. There'll be a further reduction on how much water we can withdraw from the aquifer, from the Edwards aquifer. But those restrictions do not apply to all of our other water sources. We have Trinity Water. We have our desal plant. We have Canyon Lake Water. We have other water sources that can supplement this, and those are not restricted under a drought. So through water management, we are able to make have our customers' needs taken care of.
All right, we're going to take a break here. Ben has called in. I'm going to get Ben on the air when we come back from this break. If you got a question or a comment for Robert Puente, the president and CEO of the San Antonio Water System, here's the number, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. A lot more to go over as we talk about what's happening with SAWS, water rates, and other issues. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio, President and CEO of the San Antonio Water System, Robert Puente. He's here to answer your questions about SAWS and the future of water here in San Antonio. The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Ben. And Ben, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. Hello, Mr. Puente. Thank you for your commitment with the city, you know. But, sir, that chiller, it's a bad idea. That chiller's old. We want new equipment at the arena. You know, we're going to have such a beautiful city here that's being remodeled and no water. Okay? So we really need to think out of the box, sir. And then that Guadalupe, who's thinking about draining and pollute our river? We can't do that.
All right. Ben, thank you for that. So let's talk about the chiller plant first. Okay, so downtown, there's this amazing system of pumping cold water through the convention center, other buildings throughout this. It saves a lot of energy. It's just a really great idea to have this. And there are two chiller plants. One of them is on Commerce Street, right across from between the Denny's and the Grand Hyatt. And there's one on Cherry Street as well. And so you're moving this water around. But now the proposal is move the chiller plant that's on Commerce Street and that they would put a hotel there. So what is happening?
Well, again, this is a city initiative, Project Marvel. The initial design plans we've seen is a hotel right where we are currently located. But from what I understand from city officials, this would not happen until the latter part of Project Marvel. And so that gives us a time to figure out what we're going to do. Now, because of the growth that's going to be happening, even without having to move, we would have to expand the chiller plant to meet all of the demand that's coming. Ideally, what should happen, and I've talked to the city, and they're going to do this, it's just a question of when, is that entire sports and entertainment district, for example, to whoever builds there, whoever renovates there, would have to be one of our chiller customers. So these new customers that would come in would help pay for the expansion, help pay for a potential move if we have to move. So right now, we don't even know if we have to move because we're in those initial stages. This issue was taken by the proponents and opponents of Project Marvel and used as a political football to try to get their point across. But for us, we are waiting to see what the plans are that the city is going to do. So if they do plan a hotel there, it's over 5 years from now. So we have plenty of time to figure out what's going to happen next.
I've heard the number $200 million for a new facility in a new location. Is that about right?
No, because we don't know. First of all, we don't know where we're moving. We don't know when we would be moving. It's a number, again, that is asked of us, and we have to throw something out there. So there's no engineering plans. There's no design plans that give us that type of number. It's a number that we have looked at and used because other cities have had to move their plant. And so that's where that number came from. It's not a number that anyone should be relying on right now.
Moving that plant, I mean, we're talking about these pipes, pressurized pipes moving the cold water and then the water coming back to be rechilled. That's an incredible complex system. And I'm worried about, like, how hard would it be to, when you move the facility, you got to move the pipes too, right? So that's going to be tearing up a lot of downtown.
Yes. Not all the pipes would have to be moved. It would have to have additional infrastructure from wherever the plant is to hook up to where those current pipes are underground. So yes, wherever we move, there'd be a lot of construction there. If and when we move, there would be a lot of construction there.
So I get it that you're going to need more capacity to deal with Project Marvel. that just makes sense. But having to move the facility, that's a whole different separate question, I think, because you have the other facility on Cherry Street, and that could be expanded, couldn't it?
Yes. We have an engineering consultant on that we've hired that will help answer all of those. For example, there's a tremendous amount of growth happening on the west side of downtown. The chiller plant on Cherry Street essentially handles the Alamo Dome. The other plant handles the far east side of downtown. It doesn't go all the way to where we're sitting on here today. And so that plan will be looking at what we're doing with another plant in West San Antonio. We also do chilling at Port Authority.
That's a different plant.
That's a different plant. And we're also looking at what their needs are. And so all of these questions are very preliminary because we haven't had those kinds of studies done yet.
But the other really fascinating part, I just really think this is a great system, is the reliability of it. I've never heard about the chiller plants going down and causing a ruckus in downtown. They seem to work pretty well.
Yes, it's an energy saver also. What we do is cold water is, we chill it to almost like a slush method, and it makes its way into different buildings in downtown San Antonio. They use that for air conditioning. That water then comes back. It's a closed loop, comes back to SAWS, to our facility, gets re-chilled and reused again. And so we even have incentives to with these buildings that if you return the water to us at a certain temperature, then you get a discount on your bill. So they're encouraged, they're incentivized to be energy efficient also. So this was a part of the city's action plan, climate action plan, to do these kinds of things. So we're very happy to be part of this and really be at the forefront of something that really helps us in the long run, not just with water, but energy also.
Well, the big question a lot of people have, if this happens, you have to build a new chiller facility somewhere. It's going to have to be in proximity of downtown.
Yes.
And it's going to be an expensive $200 million. Of course, that is very ballpark. But still, where's that money going to come from?
Well, not the ratepayers. This is a business unit separate from water and wastewater. So our water and wastewater, residential customers, commercial customers, do not pay for that. If you are a customer of the chilled water system, then you pay, but not the general public.
I mean, that seems like a lot of $200 million is a lot of chilled water. And you really can make that back?
Well, it's going to be amortized. There might be other funding that we need. But for right now, it's very difficult to talk about because we don't know. We don't know if we're going to move, number one. How large is Project Marvel? When are there going to really be that demand that we have? So we just have a lot of waiting to see what happens.
And the land that it's on now is owned by SAWS?
Correct.
And so that, I guess that would be sold, and then that would be offset. I'm not going to offset the entire thing, but that's also part of the arithmetic.
Yes. Through the city, that would happen, the sale of that property.
All right, let's go to Sean. And Sean, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just have a question. I know that part of our drought issue is keeping the groundwater. We lose a lot of groundwater, don't get enough rain. Is there been any discussion about how we keep more of the rain here that comes in? I know that other places, other cities, nations have implemented things to just capture that water so it doesn't flow away. And I live next to the Greenway down south, and it's just every time there's a rain, it's just I look at that and it's just it rises 20 feet. We have all this water, and it just goes away. So, that's my question. Is there any kind of investment, or how do we about keeping the water we get here?
All right, Sean, thank you for that. And that also would have, pardon the pun, downstream impacts on trying to avoid flash floods that we've had.
Yes. The initial part of capturing some of that rain, we actually have the best water catchment system that you can ever think of, and that's the Edwards Aquifer. When it rains, a good part of that rain falls into the recharge zone, a contributing zone, makes its way into the aquifer, so it's stored there for us to use. But I understand what he's talking about is water that makes its way into the aquifer. One thing we have to understand and realize that water is very, very dirty water. It's coming off the street, picking up columns of grit, oils, and grease, animal and bird kind feces that it all collects. You would then have to store it somewhere, and then you would have to treat it. So it's a great initiative, but you have to be willing to spend that kind of money. And if we capture a lot of that water, then people downstream that rely on the river flow would be object also to that kind of system that we would have.
But having the Edwards Aquifer be the best water catchment system relies on not having an abundance of impervious cover, a lot of parking lots and blockage. We've got to have ground that can absorb the water.
Yes, and we do not do land regulation. The city does, but the city is very good at that. They have a program where they buy property over the recharge zone and protect it from all development. So that's great. Some of the city's development rules also protect the aquifer in that endeavor as far as impervious cover.
All right. And then let's go to caller John. And John, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I know that at one time that there was a lot of talk and interest in desalinization from the brine water outside of Austin, and yet the right-of-way problems and the cost was too great, and yet they never talk about doing it down at the Gulf, and there's a ton of water there, and I know that there's new technical problems with it. Tampa, Florida has one, and there's problems with the environmental waste off of it. But if they did one, then all the land between San Antonio and the coast would become fertile land that they could irrigate it. It would take the pressure off of the aquifer, and with that water, then the collection of the water in the aquifer would enliven all of the springs in the area up to New Braunfels. It would just be a great thing. And with them letting the developers build over the recharge zones, they're just continuing to pollute this aquifer. Someday it's going to be maybe unusable if they don't watch themselves.
All right, John, thank you for that. So John's, you know, promoting the idea of ocean desal. That is something that they've been talking a lot about in Corpus Christi, and they have realized it's not easy, it's not cheap, and it takes a lot of energy and has a lot of problems. So what about that?
We don't do it here in San Antonio because we're already doing it in Bear County.
But with briny water.
Yes, it's salt water that's right under our feet right here in Bear County. So we SAWS do not have to go to the coast to bring that water to San Antonio. A lot of the things that the gentleman talked about are state issues that the state would have to get involved in as to who is paying for that. But even if you're a coastal city, and yes, there's a ton of water out there in the Gulf, and so you have to be understanding that it's very, very energy intensive. The disposal of the brine, which is the waste after you clean up the water, what do you do with it? The Gulf of Mexico is not a gulf that easily can accept that kind of brine. So they have huge environmental impacts if you're wanting to get water out of the Gulf. But luckily, again, in San Antonio, we are already desaling water, but we're using it from a brackish, salty aquifer.
Also, the idea of pumping water from the coast and bringing it all the way up, I say up purposefully, to San Antonio, it's like it would be very energy intensive because they're at sea level and we are not.
Yes. When you carry a case of water, it is very heavy. Water is heavy. Our desalination plant here in Bexar County uses a ton of energy. It takes a lot of energy to move that water from the coast anywhere inland.
All right, so we got to take another break here. Got a bunch of other callers, David, Brian, Sherry. I'm going to get you on the air with Robert Puente, President and CEO of SAWS, when we come back from the break. And if you've got a question, give us a call. The 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Robert Puente is here to take your questions and give you answers about your water, your city, your SAWS. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Have a property past its prime? Consider donating it to Texas Public Radio. It's hassle-free, and you may qualify for a tax write-off, too. Learn more at tpr.careasy.org/realestatedonation.
David Martin Davies, we're talking about San Antonio Water System. They're talking about a rate adjustment, I've been corrected to say. Rate adjustment, which means we'll probably have to pay more. We're going to get into that. A lot of other issues, but I got all these callers, and I want them to have their chance with their questions. The number is 833-877-8255. Let's go to David. And David, you're on the air with Robert Puente, President and CEO of SAWS.
Okay. I'll try and make it as quick as possible. How can we protect our water if we have subdivisions like the Guajolote Ranch subdivision? Yeah, everybody knows about that big controversy, and that they're going to purify their water and all the secondary effluents or whatever it is. Excuse me, I don't know all the quick terminology, but the idea there is we're not protecting our aquifer, our main source of drinking water. Also, same thing, PGA. Built over the aquifer. How are we going to be able to prevent this from happening? And, you know, as we know, the 21st century, this global warming is causing so much problems for everyone. And it's not gold that's the most precious thing in the earth. It's water. Mm-hmm. We're all made out of water. But I just wanted to express my opinion on. I'm just listening off the air.
Well, thanks, David. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate you speaking to those items. So, Robert Puente, Guajolote Ranch, you're actually set to talk to City Council later about that. What are you planning to tell Council?
Well, Guajolote Ranch was a development that was going to locate in our water service area, but it's not our wastewater service area. So under the law, we are mandated to provide water if someone asks for it, if they're in our service area. And so since we were had that obligation, we used that as a tool to talk. Lennar Homes is the developer, about their wastewater. They still needed a wastewater. And so we were able to negotiate with them 9 different concessions that we feel that, along with the geology of the area, is such that it is we've minimized the potential contamination of our aquifer. Because first of all, that water, it's very unlikely that it would make it to the Edwards aquifer. As I mentioned, the geology, there's certain geology there that would prevent it from getting all the way to the aquifer. Our wells are a good distance away from that development. The water that is discharged from the development, the majority of that water is going to be used on site, their development, their 1,100 acres, for common grounds irrigation. So all of those things that we negotiated with Lennar, we feel very confident about what we are doing to protect the aquifer.
So when the folks out there who have organized very well, and they're raising concerns that if the Guajolote Ranch is able to put together their own wastewater treatment plant, they're saying that the discharge into the watershed would degrade the quality of the Edwards aquifer, and you're saying you don't see that?
No, not at all. Again, it's because of the enhanced treatment that we put into our contract with Lennar Homes, which is increased filtration and nutrient removal. This is one of 2 wastewater treatment plants in the state of Texas that have the highest quality discharge. There's already 17 other wastewater treatment plants in this area. So this is not unique. We've already known what can happen. We've already negotiated with them to the extent that we are not concerned. Well, we have done everything we can to mitigate whatever danger there would be to our aquifer.
I have an email from a listener, Randy Newman. He says that there was a 2-year peer review study by Southwest Research Institute, which was commissioned by the city of San Antonio, which concluded that any wastewater discharge into the Helotes Creek watershed would degrade the quality of water recharging the aquifer. Can you respond to that?
I'm sorry, I'm getting calls from city council, but if you could repeat that.
Randy Newman His email says that there was a peer review study by Southwest Research Institute commissioned by the city of San Antonio that concluded that any wastewater discharge into the Helotes Creek would degrade the quality of water recharging the Edwards Aquifer.
Well, it did not say any discharge. It said certain types of discharge, and which would be essentially one that doesn't have the safeguards that we placed on this wastewater treatment plant.
There's also the question of when there's like, and I've seen what Lennar says, and what they propose makes sense under normal conditions. But when they also have that caveat saying that when there are extraordinary rain events, meaning floods, that there will probably have contaminated, the wastewater treatment plant won't be able to handle it?
We don't think that's true. One of the negotiated items is what is called a wet well, where they have to hold the discharge for at least 24 hours before it could be released. So that gives them enough time to handle whatever kind of emergency may happen at that time.
Okay, so there's a contingency.
Correct.
Let's go to a caller, Brian. And Brian, you're on the air.
Hello. I have two recommendations as far as saving water for anybody. One is for everybody to have dual flush toilets. I'd recommend them highly. There's a significant lower use of water for the low flush. And the other recommendation is don't flush for number one, if you know what I mean. And a third thing, really, is the low flush on the dual flush toilet is perfectly adequate for number two. I've never had to use the number two. I've never had to use the high level of flush for number two in many, many years. So that's thank
All
you
right.
very much.
As I used to say in California, if it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. But all right, we appreciate you, Brian. So talk about, you know, how SAWS is helping people install low water usage.
SAWS was so successful at that program that we discontinued it because almost every toilet in town is already a low flush toilet. So there's no more incentives to be given.
All right. But there's other things. You're always looking for ways to help people do things like that. Let's go to Sherry. And Sherry, you're on the air.
Hi. I live across from Helotes Creek, and I'm calling about the Guadalupe Ranch and Lennar Homes. And I saw on one of the proposals of wastewater was that each property would have their own septic tank. And I've not heard that been discussed at all. And every other house around here has septic tanks. And I was just wondering why that is not happening at this property.
All right, Sherry, thank you for that. So this is a high-density development. So I think that's probably the concern. Robert Puente? Well,
first of all, it is not up to SAWS to have a developer put in septic tanks or not. But one thing we did negotiate is that 50% of this property, 500 acres, would be open space. And the remaining part is 30% impervious cover. So those two items, again, limit the type of density, limit the type of discharges that are going to come out. So septic is an option that the developer had. They chose not to take it.
But how much water will they use? I mean, you're going to be selling them water. Developments, we're seeing a lot of developments. I mean, how much more of a strain does that have on SAWS?
Almost no strain at all. We have plenty of water. Their permit or their USA utility service agreement is for what is called EDUs, for 3,000 EDUs. An EDU is roughly one home.
All right, let's go to the caller, Pam. And Pam, you're on the air.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. I'm trying to understand the development of new homes being built and multiple facilities going up with lots of units and the drought restrictions. So with the drought restrictions, how does that affect new developments? Aren't they going to be using the water too? And, you know, where does that fall amidst everything going on with the drought restrictions?
All right, Pam, thank you for that question. So we're not seeing lack of water as a something that should constrict new development. Is that what you're saying?
That is not happening in San Antonio, because if you look at our water supply, we have calculated that the growth we're going through and the amount of water that we have, we will be able to meet that demand. We do not control development. We don't have a say-so in whether someone develops or not during a drought. That's between the state of Texas and the city of San Antonio if they happen to develop within our city limits. So we don't have land use powers.
So what about who pays for the laying of all the extra pipelines and things?
The developer.
So if they put a new development someplace, all these homes like Lennar does, they run the line to Saws, your main line.
At their cost.
Okay. And then as we'll probably get into this when we come back from the break, but as the city of San Antonio is asking Saws to contribute more to the general fund, does that, you know, by selling more water to these developments, does that, you know, create more opportunities to do that?
Well, the city has not asked us to increase our contribution to their general revenue fund.
Okay. Not officially?
Not even unofficially. They have every single budget cycle it's talked about. And so, and it should be, because that's a revenue source, that's a potential expense we have, but it's nothing formal at all.
All right, okay, we got to take a break here. Got a bunch more callers. I want to get you all on the air. And our number is 833-877-8255. But we do need to talk about the proposed rate adjustment and what that looks like and why it's needed. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We have been having a conversation with Robert Puente, president and CEO of the San Antonio Water System. We mentioned earlier that he is supposed to go to city council to talk about the Guajolote Ranch and what does that mean for the protection of the Edwards Aquifer. And apparently, and he mentioned that he's getting calls from city council, he needs to be there right now, which city council is basically like across the street, a block away from where we are. And so he had to leave the studio. And so he's not here right now. We'll get him back soon, but not today. But right now, we've got about 15 minutes left in the program. So what we can do is we can listen to callers, express, you know, ask your questions, make your comments, tell us what you think ought to happen with San Antonio Water System, adjusting, raising the rates, other issues. Let's go to a caller. And Lisa, I'm sorry that Robert Puente had to go. He was very regretful, and he said he has to go. He's got to talk to city council about this. But Lisa, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I live on property that the Helotes Creek runs through. I know the area. Saws, actually Metro Health negotiated with Lennar, and one of their negotiations was to take some of the wastewater and spread it over the common areas of the Guajolote Ranch. However, that is on mostly rock, and they're saying that they need 4 inches of soil. How are they going to get the, and I know it's not Saws' problem, but Saws has agreed that 4 inches was adequate. Anybody that lives out here knows that you can't put 4 inches of soil totally on 500 acres, which is what Lennar is saying they're going to do. And is 4 inches enough to actually clean the water before it goes into the creek? And from the creek, it will go into the Trinity Aquifer, which does feed the Edwards Aquifer eventually. So the contaminants, whatever's put, is in the effluent that they're discharging, will eventually go into the water system and will affect our drinking water. And I wonder how Mr. Puentes rationalized that would be okay.
Well, Mr. Puentes, he had to go.
I know he's not there, but that is a question that we've been asking over and over again, and all of the data that our group has looked at does agree that this affluent will affect the quality of water for 2 point whatever million people who use the Edwards Aquifer. And yet Shaw's thought it was a good, it was an okay idea to negotiate that they could do this. So he says they've negotiated to protect our water, but the science says haven't done enough.
All right. Well, Lisa, thank you for calling in. Sorry, Robert Puente had to take off, and he's not able to answer those concerns, and I'm not able to either. Let's go to Chip on the phone. And Chip, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. My question is this. This is a very unique opportunity to preserve a piece of property that can never be replaced. And regardless of negotiations about the water, I just think it's time for us not to guarantee that Lennar makes a profit and there aren't more homes packed into an area that really is kind of a water jewel in South Texas. Thank you.
All right. Well, Texas, we have these very strong property rights. You can't just condemn the land and say, Lennar, you can't build here. Someone would have to come up and convince Lennar to sell them that property at market value. And it is a beautiful part of Texas. I totally understand why people who live out there don't want to see it developed, but that's pretty much what we do in Texas. The TCEQ, they did approve the licensing for this, but you know, we know that those regulations are not the strictest that you could come up with, and the efforts to try to hold this back. I understand why people who live out there want to preserve it as beautiful and scenic, picturesque, and just ideal Texas. And that's the fight. Let's go to the next caller. Let's go to Scott. Hey, Scott, you're on the air, Scott.
Yes, I'd like to see a progressive rate in the future where a family that might not use much water conserves, whatever, there's like some sort of floor or minimum payment for access to water and the sewage system and all that stuff. I live in a pretty affluent area, and a lot of people have large decorative lawns, and there's really no, they don't care if they get like a fine, because if I get $150, $250 fine, maybe even $500 fine, not a big deal, but having to replace an entire lawn is going to cost thousands of dollars. So they're going to continue watering and water excessively with really no fear of being fined if they ever get caught, because there's not a whole lot of oversight in that area. So increasing the cost of, if I use so many thousands of gallons a month just to like water a decorative grass, which is not really being used, it's just for aesthetic purposes, I think would be in everybody's best interest for the basically conserving water. And then there can be for, you know, big golf courses, sporting fields. Well, they can have maybe a kind of a little bit different rate.
Sure.
But I think that would make sense going forward. So,
there is a tiered rate system for general residential customers with SAWs. The first 4,000 gallons cost like a dollar per 1,000 gallons, just under that. And so it's really low. And usage over 20,000 gallons jumps to $5.70 per 1,000 gallons. So it goes, it's stepped up for people who use more water. They are paying higher water rates to do that just because of the points that you made. So they're trying to keep water affordable for people who don't use a lot of water. And that's not a lot of water. That's a really low level. You really have to like make sure your showers are short in order to fall under that 1,000-gallon use area. But they have also affordability programs for low-income and low-usage customers. So those are in place. So if they do a water rate adjustment, they're going to raise the water rate. They're talking about doing that. It'll be nuanced. It'll be varied. I'm not sure what they're proposing, but we're going to hear about that later on. And let's go to Elisa. Elisa, you're on the air.
Hi. Two things real fast is that anything sewage, like treated water or whatever, if it's not like clean or safe, that could not only affect people with sensitive health conditions, but also the wildlife. Two is that he was saying that SAWS or the city isn't responsible for implementing or taking action on water use. Well, we're in severe drought. It says online we're on stage four, which I haven't really
heard about. There's Edwards Aquifer. There's Edwards Aquifer levels. Uh-huh. That's one thing. That's stage four. But then there's the SAWS level, and that is stage three.
Okay, so the other thing is long-term vulnerabilities that San Antonio's water source, the Edwards Aquifer, is sensitive to drought. We know this. City faces potential water gaps by 2035. That's only 4 years away. So instead of like the city being like, oh, we don't need to worry about that, they should be worried because everybody who lives here and around here and uses that water source is going to affect us. You know, you want to build stuff, but why not take care of what we have and the people that are already here and that are already paying to just survive, you know, with stage three water restrictions. But anyway, I appreciate it.
Right. And if someone moves into an area or builds in the area that SAWS is servicing, they have no choice. They have to provide them the water, like Lennar Homes. They have to provide
that,
them.
But
so unless, it's going to require action at the state level to change that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't see that happening with the people we now have in Austin because they're all pro-growth.
Yeah.
All right, Elisa, thank you for the call. And let's go to Tracy. And Tracy, thank you so much for calling in. We're short on time, but go ahead.
I'll try to hurry. A couple of things. I was looking at some of Mr. Fuentes' answers to some of the questions. With regard to the Southwest Research Institute, he sort of just kind of airbrushed over that. Here's my question, one of the questions. Did SAWS conduct their own hydrological tests for that area? No. So I guess they're just relying on the good guys over at Lennar on what they're saying. Oh, we're going to take care of everything. We're going to do this thing. And for him to say that the geology says that that water that they disperse on the surface is not going to reach the aquifer is a big, fat bunch of baloney. We know that any water travels over a mile a day in this area because of the karst rock foundation. So how in the heck are they going to spray all those gallons of treated effluent on the green areas and so forth, and that not get down to the aquifer? That, in my opinion, is total BS. I'm sorry, but he is not being truthful. He is not.
Tracy, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate your passion and your correct SAWS. As far as I know, they did not correct their own hydrological assessment. Instead, they have been using the information as provided from Lennar. That would say there's minimal risk to the Wahelota Ranch and to Helotes Creek. Thank you for your calls. Sorry that Robert Puente had to take off, but he's got to take care of business at City Hall. I'll try and get him back here soon. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.